Good afternoon. It is 3:07, Monday, March 14th, 2022. This is the Senate Finance and Education Finance and Policy Committee. We do have a quorum, and we finally have all the technical issues resolved. Senator Wieger, are you with us?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. So we have three bills on the agenda today. I have one first up, Senate File 3534. Turn it over to Senator Eichhorn.
All right, Senator Chamberlain, to Senate File 3534, do you have any amendments?
Mr. Chair, I do not have any amendments.
All right, to the bill.
Mr. Chair, this has to do with charter schools, kind of a one-off unique situation. Usually we would not allow any restrictions about access to charter schools, but this is a unique situation. The charter school we're writing something for here is the Minnesota School for Deaf and Hard of Hearing. So what's happening is what they'd like to have is to limit the who can apply and get acceptance to the school so that they can continue to focus on their mission, which is 100% effort towards deaf and hard of hearing. So that's all this is. The only language change is on page 2.33, and onto the second page, talked about 90% threshold. So it's just to allow the school to focus on their primary mission, which is deaf and hard of hearing. Else you start getting these one-offs and it becomes much more difficult for them to do it. So that's the bill.
Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. First up, we have Susan Lane Outlaw, who's online to testify. Just state your name for the record and who you're with and go ahead and get started.
My name is Dr. Susan Lane Outlaw. I'm the executive director at Metro Deaf School. Thank you, chairperson and committee members. I just wanted to bring this to everyone's attention and explain, because I think a number of people have had questions. We've operated since 1993 as a federal setting four, meaning we were 100% special ed with deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing students. We're one of the oldest charter schools. That's always been our mission and vision. This past October, we got notified by MDE that we would have to accept any student to the school, and that we would have to change our federal instructional level. This certainly has caused some concern, as all of our curriculum, all of our teachers are licensed in this area. And also, we work with over 35 school districts, resident school districts, and the majority of our students are actually placed by those districts, meaning they're looking for us to provide something those districts don't have in district. So we serve as their federal setting for almost all the metro area and surrounding districts, even into Wisconsin. Our students just need access to language, and then it functions like a general ed school, but everybody uses sign language. All of our teachers are licensed deaf, hard of hearing, and that's how we specialize. Students as young as kindergarten can go to the front office and have a communication interaction, you know, give them field trip money or give them lunch money, things like that. We want them to have that rich access, and that just means that everybody is focused on that same mission and vision.
Thank you for sharing. Next up, we have Caitlin Snyder from the from Education Minnesota. There's just two testifiers, and we'll take questions. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. For folks who might have wandered onto this YouTube streaming site and don't typically watch Capitol hearings, there's sort of a parlance when you have a soft opposition to a bill, you say that you have concerns. In this case, concerns is even too strong of a word. I would just say I have a little bit of hesitation about this bill, and Chair Chamberlain touched on those in his opening statements about one-offs. So I have no concerns about the programming at the Metro Deaf School, but I might have concerns about what could follow after this. So there are schools that focus on blind and visually impaired students. There are schools that focus on other disability areas or certain languages or other criteria. Public schools accept everyone that come to them. So I would have a little bit of hesitation about what would happen in the future based on this precedent. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Senator Wieger?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and to Ms. Dr. Lane Outlaw, it's my understanding that you said the Department of Education recommended this remedy in the proposed bill. Is that correct?
Senator Chamberlain?
I'll let Dr. Outlaw, Elaine Outlaw, do answer. That's what...
Dr. Yes. Outlaw?
Yes, we have been in contact with MDE, and they've reviewed the language, and we're fine with what we were proposing.
Senator Wieger?
Yes, Ms. Chairman. Thank you.
Any additional questions for members? Seeing none, Senator Chamberlain, any closing comments?
Just a quick wrap-up. It did... To the extent that we can get some agreement on something in this legislative body, in this planet, it did pass the House committee 18-1, and we should all feel blessed that we don't have 19 members on a committee. So it did pass with almost unanimous, and I think the one was excused, so unanimous in their committee.
All right, with that, Senator Chamberlain moves that Senate File 3534 do here pass the committee and be sent to general orders. All those in favor say aye. Senator Wieger?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Chair. You know, Senator Chamberlain, recognizing the assumed bipartisanship, but why not put it on the consent calendar?
Well, yeah, that would be fine, too. Thank you.
Which one do you want to send it to? That's up to you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
So the motion would be to Senator Chamberlain moves that Senate File 3534 do here pass the committee and be sent to the consent calendar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. The motion does prevail and 3534 is sent to the consent calendar. Next up, we have Senate File 3656, Senator Duckworth.
Okay, next up is Senate File 3656. I'm sure in the spirit of bipartisanship, this will fly through as well. So, Senator Duckworth, I don't think we have any amendments for you, correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
All right, go to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to present Senate File 3656, referred to as a Scholarship Program for Students with Disability Act. I'm going to go ahead and let our subject matter expert go ahead and walk and talk through and explain the bill and then touch on or answer any questions that come up, as well as have some testifiers present as well, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. So that would be Ms. Jill Seth. Someone's not F1. Is that true?
Are you on mute, and is that needs to be on mute?
I'm on mute on both. Wasn't me. I'm not the offender.
Everything was okay when you testified, Mr. Chair.
Everything's okay up here, too. Senator Swedinsky was the violator. All right. So go ahead, Ms. Jill Seth.
Thank you, Chair Chamberlain and committee members.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, pull it in front of you more. There you go.
Thank you. Okay. So I'm just going to do a summary of the summary, which should all be in your packets. So this just has one section, this bill. Subdivision 1 gives the act a title, which is a scholarship program for students with a disability act. Subdivision 2 provides various definitions. Subdivision 3 states the qualifications for participating in the program, including parental agreement, how long a student is eligible to participate, and allows for a student to re-enroll at the resident district at any time after starting the program. Subdivision 4 requires the commissioner to increase the former serving school district's general education aid by an amount equal to 50% of the statewide average general education aid per adjusted pupil unit for each year the student remains enrolled in an eligible school. And it also states that if a student was enrolled in a charter school, that dollar amount would actually go to the student's resident district. Subdivision 5 requires the commissioner to increase the former serving school districts or charter schools' special education aid by an amount equal to the average cost of by disability category, referenced in the most recent special education statewide average expenditure report, multiplied by the number of students within each disability category enrolled at the eligible school. Subdivision 6 provides for the administration of the program and what the commissioner must do for eligible students, including determining eligibility of applications within 21 days. Subdivision 7 provides for the establishment of the program and what the commissioner must do if the parent fails to comply with the agreement under Subdivision 3. Subdivision 8 states that an eligible non-public school is autonomous and given the maximum freedom to provide for the educational needs of students. Subdivision 9 requires the public school district where an eligible student is enrolled to consider the primacy of parental rights when considering whether to allow an eligible student to enroll in an eligible school, and it requires a reasonable explanation for denying that student from enrollment. Subdivision 10 states that if any provision of this law is found unconstitutional and void, that the remaining provisions are still in effect, and then lastly, makes this section effective the day following final enactment. And I'd just like to draw your attention to the flow chart in your packets. So the question asks, is your public school student with a disability want to enroll in a non-public school? And so you can follow your way through there. And like under yes, first you must sign an agreement with two entities. That's under subdivision 3A of the bill. And then the commissioner, Department of Education must do two things. The left side is subdivision 4. The right side is subdivision 5. And then the bottom left one, what happens if the public school will not sign an agreement? That's subdivision 9. And then lastly, the right bottom is subdivision 3C. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Jill Seth.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
if I may, I'm very thankful for the technical explanation, but if I could offer some layman's terms as well, I would appreciate that real quick before we go to the next testifier.
Certainly. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, and thank you, Ms. Jill Seth, for being here to help with the technical aspect of these things. So this bill really gets at a longstanding issue that a lot of our public schools have to deal with and a lot of our families have to deal with. The bill would essentially allow a student of special needs to be able to go to an eligible school, which could be a non-public school, and have those special education dollars follow them there. Now, typically, if that were to happen right now, if it sort of happened today, if one of these students were to no longer go to their local public school district and go to a non-public school, well, the funding for that student, whether it's general ed or special education funding, would no longer go to the district. This would allow for that student and their resident district to still receive 50% of the general education funding that would be assigned to that student, while also allowing them to pursue schooling or education or services at an eligible school where those special education dollars would follow them. So this is an attempt to also make our public school districts somewhat whole by providing them 50% of that general education funding when it comes to the student. And so I'm just teeing that up and give you some context as we have this conversation. We're trying to find a way that serves the students well, that serves the parents well, and also allows for some of that funding that school districts talk about or have told us is an issue for them. Another aspect of this bill is sometimes districts, when a special education student is served by another school, sometimes a bill would just show up to the district. And it can be a very substantial bill. They might not have any awareness regarding the dollar amount or that it was even coming. And that, there's no one to blame for that. It's just how the system is set up. This would allow, in these circumstances, for that not to happen. So that would be prevented as well. Mr. Chair, that's just some of the context I wanted to give before we turn to our next testifier. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. So first on the list is, I know her, but I still can't pronounce her last name. I'll say Gina. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you're with for the record.
Yes. Hello. My name is Gina Schmidt-Deal.
Schmidt-Deal.
Yes. I'm a parent and advocate in Minnesota's 6th Congressional District. So I live in Centerville, Minnesota with my husband Brian and our three children, Deacon, Gunner, and Layla. I'm here to ask that you support Senate File 3656, Scholarship Program for Students with a Disability. When my husband Brian and I purchased our first home after we got married, we looked for homes in highly rated public school districts. We were happy with our children's school experiences up until COVID shut down all of Minnesota's public schools. We made the decision to send our oldest son, Deacon, to a private school for his kindergarten year in 2020 through 21 so that he could attend school in person. We had always wanted to look into the option of private education for our children, but when our middle son, Gunner, was born with Down syndrome, many private schools responded with hesitation or a flat-out no to enrolling Gunner because of the lack of funding to support children with disabilities in their schools. We are thankful that the current school that our children attend is open to accepting children of all abilities, but it comes with a financial burden to our family and many others that have chosen private education for their children. Not only are we paying for private tuition, but many families are also paying for paraprofessional support, occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy, applied behavioral analysis, and other therapies for their children. My son Gunner is sweet, he's stubborn, he loves dancing, drawing, Paw Patrol, and going to school with his friends. Gunner was uniquely created with Down syndrome. This does not make his value less, but this does make the way that he learns differently than most, and that may include giving him more support inside of the classroom. Providing scholarship opportunities to students in non-public schools will decrease the financial burden for the family and for the public school. Public schools do have some fixed costs, but most of their costs are variable, meaning costs are reduced when students leave the same way that costs are increased when new students enroll. When enrolling students in non-public schools, this will save the public schools money because legalities like due process do not follow the student. Schooling options for individuals who have a disability are greatly limited to public schools that have funding available to support students' additional learning and behavioral needs. By equipping more students with more funding, we can support more students in the school setting that fits their needs best, along with meeting the needs and desires of their family. When we are fighting for equity in more areas of schooling, we need to fight for equity for students with disabilities in private schools. That includes supporting them inside the classroom, not having them pulled out away from their peers to go to public schools to receive their services. In the National Down Syndrome Society and Down Syndrome Education International's publication, Down Syndrome, Guidelines for Inclusive Education, they write, "We have learned more in recent years about how development and learning is influenced by all interactions that children have with other children, family members, educators, and the wider community. The education system in most countries have been the slowest to change, yet all the published evidence shows that children with disabilities achieve more when they are fully included in the regular classes with their peers than when they are in segregated special education classes. The peers that they learn with are better prepared to support them and fully include them in their communities throughout their childhood and adult lives. Inclusion and acceptance starts very young. If an individual with a disability is included from an early age, they will not be considered different or weird, and it will be seen as a peer included in everyday activities from childcare to school to working alongside their peers. Typically, developing peers gain understanding of diversity, disability, and tolerance through being a part of an inclusive school community. Let's work on making solutions to support and include individuals with disabilities in all educational spaces, including public and private schools. Again, I am requesting that you support Senate File 3656. By giving students of all abilities the option to attend the school that best fits their needs, we are making more inclusive places for all people. Thank you for your consideration of this matter, and I hope you take action to ensure that people with disabilities have the same opportunities in school as everyone else.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt-Deal. Next up, we have Ms. Coffee Monska. She's on Zoom. Ms. Monska, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you're with for the record. You may begin. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Coffee Monska, and I'm just a mom of three kids, three boys, ages 14, 16, and 17. My 17-year-old has special needs. He has a cognitive developmental disability, so although he's 17, it's like he's two, he's not potty trained. But I can tell you a few things he can do. He can operate his iPad to watch all his favorite shows and play his games. He can count to 20. He can say his first and last name. He can spell his first name. He can speak in short and complete sentences and say things like, I need an apple. He eats about 20 apples a day. He's addicted to them. Knows all the names of his family members. He calls me Mommy, and he calls Dad Ken Daddy. He's a loving kid who will come up to you and grab your face and ask if you're happy every day, maybe like 3 or 4 times a day, and he will not leave you alone until you tell him you are happy. So he's a great kid. And many people might be thinking, who cares about kids with disabilities learning? They're not going to be engineers or scientists. Some will be, though. And however, the IDEA ensures that all children with disabilities are entitled to a free and appropriate education. In the 1970s, U.S. schools only educated about 1 in 5 kids with disabilities. Kids with disabilities are children, too, equal in their parents' eyes, God's eyes, and in the eyes of the law. There's 3 reasons that I have here that we need these scholarships for kids with special needs, even more so than for other kids. There's such a demand for schools for kids with special needs. Our kids are unique and have many challenges, and sometimes it's hard to find a good fit for them. Parents are so desperate that they will stand in line for days to get to a school. So a new charter school opened, I heard about it. Parents lined up for days. They had tents, they had porta potties, they were going to the bathroom outside just to get their kids into that school. I arrived at 5 a.m., and luckily my grade hadn't filled up yet, but I was way late to the game. So that shows just how desperate parents are for this school. Also, I know one family, they drive their kids from Lakeville to Shoreview to go to school. Another kid on my kid's van gets on the van at 6:45 a.m. and doesn't arrive at school till 8 a.m. And so that's how desperate his parents were to get him into this school. So there's a huge need. Also, there's a bigger need for our kids, because how things work when you have a kid with special needs. Like for my kid in my school district, there's 1 classroom in the entire district for him, for kids with severe developmental disabilities. There's 1 classroom for kids who have extreme behavioral problems. And so there's not much choice. I can't even send him to another classroom within the district. And one time that really screwed me over, because he was in pre-K getting services, and then it came time for kindergarten, and I went to tour the 1 classroom they had, and they had kids. I just didn't think it'd be a good fit for my kids. Like, I couldn't even stand being in the room for a few minutes. And I thought, I can't send my kids to this classroom. And I asked the school, well, what are my options? They said, this is your only option, or you have to sue us and go through a due process proceeding. And I thought, what? I have no option. So that was my first experience with this rude awakening. So what I did was I held my kid back a year, because I didn't know what to do, so I could have a year to research other possibilities for him. And so, yeah, it's way different than it is for other kids with special needs kids. Also, schools have less incentive to change for us because they know we have no options. Just this year with my school, I asked for something, and they said, you can go somewhere else if you don't like what we're doing here. And I think they know I have nowhere else to go. And they also know they have a waiting list 1 mile long, and so they have no incentive to change. Under federal and state law, I am an equal member of the IEP team, which is, you know, the plan that we make for special needs kids, to make their goals once a year. I'm an equal member along with all of the people at the school, but yet I have 0 power. Because if I don't like it, they say leave, and I have no place to go. So I think that having this scholarship would actually make me an equal member of the IEP team. Lastly, and so I'm asking you to allow these scholarships for kids with disabilities. 20 other states have these types of programs that are just tailored toward kids with disabilities, including states who do not brag about being as progressive as Minnesota, like Arkansas, Mississippi, and Louisiana. If they can do it, so can we.
Thank you very much, Ms. Monska. Next on the list, I have Ms. Courtney Hubers. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you're with for the record. Thank you.
My name is Courtney Hubers. I'm in the Mountain View School District. I'm with myself, I think.
Okay.
Not associated with anyone else. Mother of 5 children. And my daughter Annie is who I wanted to share a bit of her story today, if you don't mind. My daughter Annie went to a private school from grades K through 2. By the end of second grade, she was nowhere close to reading. I was given what I would soon learn as classic advice from teachers around the nation. Have her eyes checked and read more at home. She'll catch on. I decided to take matters into my own hands and pulled her from school to homeschool for third grade. After a 4-month wait at the psychologist and $2,000, we finally had the results of her evaluation. She had a clear diagnosis of severe dyslexia. We were informed by her that what Annie needed was something called structured literacy. It is a specific, highly structured, sequenced way of learning to read, along with very specific teaching and phonemic awareness, which is something most of us develop without intervention. We approached our local public school in the hopes that I could partner with them for reading instruction while I homeschooled the rest. Their entire reading and counseling support team met with us and said they used a method called balanced literacy to teach all their kids. I thanked them for their time, but said that our psychologist warned us about balanced literacy and told us that approach is exactly the opposite of what dyslexics need to learn to read. So it was clear the public school is not able to help us. So now our private school, both and our public school, had proven inadequate to teach our daughter to read. We swallowed the pill, realized we had to dig into our savings and hire a private tutor trained in this approach. Most charged between $60 and $100 an hour. Over the next year, Annie had 4 hours of structured literacy instruction in reading per week, and it cost us about $16,000. We homeschooled for fourth and fifth grade, but she was now reading. And I learned other approaches in how to educate a child with dyslexia. During her fifth grade year, we both decided we wanted to try a school setting again, now that we knew more of what she needed and what we could ask for. In the spring of 2021, we were turned down from 4 different private schools who said that they really wanted to accept her, but they didn't have funding or capacity to help with extra learning challenges. Finally, we found a private school that understood the disability and how to support her. She is currently at that private school, and we're paying about $10,000 for her to go there each year. Dyslexia has been called a disability of the rich, as it doesn't fall into a special education world in many public schools because it's not a developmental disability, and dyslexic children often have above average intelligence, so they have the ability to mask it extremely well and just get by. Teachers in public and private schools are often not taught how children physically learn to read in their education as educators, and they're simply given curriculum that often switches every few years based on which publisher is interesting that particular year. Many teachers wish they could do better. I had relationships with people in the private schools. We didn't pursue much in the public schools. It just felt like a battle I wasn't ready to take on, and since they had relationships in the public schools, I thought we could get farther that way. But if they would have had funds that followed Annie on how to become more educated on how to teach her, we could have made a difference for both my daughter and the 10 to 20% of other children in the general population who have either diagnosed or undiagnosed dyslexia. Actually, during Annie's fifth grade year, my husband and I ended up donating an intro to dyslexia conference for 3 of the teachers at my daughter's former private school because they didn't have the money to learn how to teach kids to read the proper way. So they were thrilled. I just don't think it needs to be that way. Our learning disability psychologist told us that a lot of private Catholic schools have really realized the best way to teach reading, and so we should consider that. It would be a gift to parents if they could choose the school that would best teach their learning disabled children without having to pay for it out of pocket. Every child deserves to learn how to read. So I ask that you would please support these scholarships.
Thank you, Ms. Hubers. Is that right, Hubers, or is it Hubers?
It's Hubers, thank you.
All right, thanks. Next up is Ms. Caitlin Schneider. Welcome to the committee again. Please state your name and who you're with for the record. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Schneider with Education Minnesota. Our public schools are the center of their community. They provide meal services, mental health supports, and services for those learning English. They provide child care before and after school. In many towns across Minnesota, they are the largest employer. Public schools provide education and care to nearly 900,000 students across the state. This bill would undermine public education. There is no requirement in this bill that the student receives the same level of services they receive in their current IEP in their public school. In fact, the language at 217, which requires families to waive their right to a free and appropriate public education, means that the private school is under no obligation to provide kids with adequate services. Students also would lose protection outlined in the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Act, many without realizing it. And private schools can and will still be able to refuse to admit students with disabilities because of the cost of educating them. Members, this has been model legislation of the American Legislative Exchange Council, also known as ALEC, for over a decade. This provides us an opportunity to see how this has failed in other states. A mother in Arizona and her son with profound disabilities qualified for a voucher of $40,000, only to be turned away again and again from every private school they visited because of the severity of his needs. Another troubling piece of this proposed legislation is in lines 3.3 to 3.7. The cost to meet the needs of a student with profound developmental disabilities, for example, is over $52,000. The state typically only covers 60% of this cost, about $31,000, while the local district covers the rest. This bill requires the state to send the full $52,000 to the private school. This bill is just another way to defund public education. Schools will lose local, state, and federal funding to private schools at the same time fixed costs in public schools are rising. This legislation does nothing to fix the real problem, the chronic underfunding of our public schools, particularly in special education. It actually makes the problem even worse. This should be about the children. I've already walked through how this hurts students with disabilities. It hurts some students even more. This bill includes no protections for kids traditionally barred from private schools. Lines 4.5 to 4.7 specifically says that the state cannot regulate these private schools. Line 4.15 says they cannot be required to amend their admission standards. Members, there are private schools in Minnesota that do not allow admission to students of gay couples. There are private schools that bar openly gay students from attending. There are private schools that don't accept undocumented students. And there are private schools that bar kids based on their religion. This does not represent Minnesota values. Between federal and state funds, Minnesota has over a $10 billion surplus. We could completely eliminate the cross-subsidy in special education, ensure the paraprofessionals who work directly with students with disabilities are trained on their specific needs, and reduce class sizes so students get the individualized attention they deserve. Let's do better for our students with special needs. Let's invest in the systems meeting their needs today. Thank you.
Next up is Mr. Adosh Uni. Are you online, Zooming?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You may proceed, Mr. Uni. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education, and thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the department on SF 3656. Just to be frank, the department has serious concerns with this approach. This bill would establish a new voucher system for students receiving special education services to attend an accredited non-public school with public education dollars. As we've stated in past committees, MDE remains dedicated to a strong public education system in our state, and we can't support any legislation that would take money out of public schools and send it to non-public schools. We're also deeply concerned with the bill, that the bill would force students with disabilities participating in this program to forfeit federal and state legal protections, procedural due process rights, and the right to a free, appropriate public education system. MDE and our public education system are beholden to federal and state laws, and students have rights and protections under those laws, especially those students who receive special education program services. Non-public schools in Minnesota are not beholden to federal and state requirements to provide special education services to a student, are not required to adjust their services to meet changing needs under a student's IEP. This bill seems like it would benefit some students with special needs differently than others, since non-public students can accept or deny who they want. Maybe accept a student with mild needs and deny a student with more intensive needs, as opposed to our public schools who have to accept and provide services for all students. We know that our students need more attention and support now than more than ever, and we can't support legislation that would put students in a position where those supports are not guaranteed to them by law. We do appreciate the focus on supporting students receiving special education services, and we would encourage the committee and the chair to support proposals that the governor has put forth that directly are aimed at assisting students in school right in public schools right now. Just a few are reducing the special education cross-subsidy, investing in life and vocational skills training and transition programs for students receiving special education preparing to age out of the public school system, and allocating additional aid to this to special education separate sites and programs that serve the highest need students in special education settings four or higher. Again, Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. And last up is Ms. Linda Wenzel. You're remote as well, I believe. Welcome to committee. State your name and who you're with. You may proceed. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Linda Howe Wenzel. I'm a public school teacher and a special education teacher in Mankato, Minnesota. And I have been doing this for over 20 years. And I've had the opportunity to be a case manager for students with a different variety. I've worked with autistic kids. I've worked with kids with emotional behavior disorders, learning disabilities, other health disabilities, significant students with autism spectrum disorder as well. And there's different federal settings for students. There's federal setting one, which can be up to 21% of a school day that is with special education, then there's, you know, services. Then there's a federal setting two, which is 21 to up to 60% of a day that a student needs support. When I look at this bill, I know that you maybe won't be able to answer some of my questions, but I saw that it would be like the original amount a student would get, which would be $12,000, and then you would be asking for half more, which would be another $6,000. That would be like $18,000 that would follow a student. My concerns come in is that $6,000, listening to some of these parents speak about their children, was, you know, you can't hire a paraprofessional to provide the social coaching some of these kids will need, the additional modifications that they need in the classroom, the adaptations, the services that they need. I was really saddened by one of the parents that spoke that said when they suggested things that their child might need, they're really not considered part of an IEP team in a private school setting because they don't have to do that. A $6,000 increase is not also going to make them that person. It's the students need the services that they can have by least restrictive environment. I know this was talked about, and I don't know if it's really being considered. Least restrictive environment is, yes, providing the child time to be into the classroom. When you have significant needs, that least restrictive environment must also benefit them. So they are learning, they are getting the education they need, they are getting the behavior support they need. So I have been doing this, like I said, for a lot of years. And through this time, I have been very, very sad when kids have been literally kicked out of private schools, kicked out of charter schools, because they can be. Because we're a public school, we have to accept all students. They do not. And you know what that does for the social emotional esteem of children? It's really, really sad. And I just think that this bill, it makes me think, wow, if we were gonna ask the commissioner for an additional money for that, why couldn't we just ask that for all special ed students? Wouldn't all special ed students benefit by having those additional dollars? There's a lot of this that we talk about, we should, discrimination. I almost think this is us increasing discrimination of our special ed students because they would not be receiving the services they are. And it would be very upsetting for these parents and more frustration. We need to be thinking about all the supports they need and thinking about how we need to give those supports. Through my years of being a special ed teacher, I have serviced kids in the private school setting. Because of the public education system, we then support and case manage kids over there. And we would just do the minutes. So I have some students that are considered a federal setting two on my caseload. And the minutes that they need are only like 30 minutes of direct instruction. That's what I would give them in a private school. Unfortunately, when they have a behavior with a student, when they have other things that happen, they need support on a playground, they need to have those needs met right away, I wouldn't be there to support that. And that $6,000 that they're going to get in addition is not going to be the dollars to support them as well. Thank you.
Members, any questions?
Mr. Chair, are you okay with me sharing some remarks based on what was shared before we go to questions? Would that
be
okay? Yeah,
sure. Why don't you go ahead and then we'll go to questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. And I do appreciate the sentiments shared by everybody who testified, whether they are for or against the bill. Really, the intent behind this legislation is to have that conversation and start looking at different ways, options, and solutions we can best serve our parents and our students with special needs, as well as make it a win for our school districts. I don't think those goals are mutually exclusive from one another. I think we can look at ways to support our public schools, support our kids with special needs and their parents and their families as they strive to provide them the best education and services they possibly can. This bill does not provide an unlimited or uncapped amount of money regarding the scholarship and the special education funding as it relates to particular students. This bill actually brings money into some of the districts where they would get $0 currently. If a student unenrolls from a district and chooses another option, well, school districts right now don't get any of the general education funding. Under this bill, they would be allowed to get at least 50% of those dollars, thereby helping impact their bottom line and their budgets and the other students in the district. Nobody's being forced to do anything in this bill. This bill specifically says that parents have to enter into an agreement. This is something they agreed to do. They're understanding what they're getting into when it comes to providing services for their child. They're understanding the choices and the options that they're making. It's not something that they would be forced or required to do. I guess I'm not necessarily connecting the dots regarding some of the concerns in terms of folks who may be undocumented, folks who may be gay couples or a student that might be gay. This bill has nothing to do with that. I don't understand why that would be brought into the conversation. I'm more than willing to hear concerns as it relates to that. But if this bill specifically targeted any groups of individuals or attempted to discriminate, well, that would be a huge issue for me as well. And so happy to have continued conversations regarding that. Not sure what's getting lost in translation there. But, Mr. Chair, that's all I wanted to add in terms of some of the thoughts that were shared. Happy to stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Senator Isaacson.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. I just want to respond real quickly to something Senator Duckworth said. When you look at what the bill does is it gives public dollars to private schools that can make those decisions. So that's how the bill relates to that issue, is that when you're giving public dollars to schools that can choose to reject based on reasons that would be illegal for a public school to do, that's where we have a problem with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Kunesh?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator, for taking our questions. A lot of the questions that I had and concerns were already addressed or at least verbalized at this point. But I do have a question around when a student with special needs unenrolls and the parent signs an agreement that says we will not participate in a public school program. I'm wondering if that also means that they would not have access to some of the other programs or activities that students that go to private or are homeschooled per se or charter schools. For example, as a library media specialist, there were students with special ed needs in my school, and some of those students needed to have very high, complex, expensive pieces of technology to help them with their education. And so my question is, with your bill, would the school district, the public school district, be responsible for providing those pieces of equipment? Or does that now become the responsibility of the unique school that student is enrolled in?
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Senator Duckworth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Kunesh, for the question. The way the bill is written is if a parent, in consultation with the school district and the other school that would be that their child would be admitting to, if they agree to unenroll from public school and then send their child to that school, the reason why there has to be that agreement in place is the parent is acknowledging that those services that would traditionally be provided by that public school are not going to become essentially their responsibility to ensure those services are provided to their student either by this new school or institution they would be enrolled in or some other other means that they would seek out for their student.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Chair. Kunesh? Follow up. Yep. And then, but on the last line, on line 2.19, it says that the student is still eligible for services under section 1.23B.86, and that's transportation. So the school district would still be liable for transporting that student. Would that be correct?
Senator Duckworth.
I've been told that we have a technical expert that might be better suited to handle this question.
Ms. Hoffer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Kunesh, for the question. So under the language on line 2.19, a student is allowed to still be eligible for services under 123B86, which is the equal treatment statute for transportation. So under that statute, a school district is required to provide equitable services for that student if the student would like them. There are often contracts set up with non-public schools and school districts to transport students. And if that is the case, then those transportation services would still be eligible for non-public pupil transportation aid.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffer. Senator Kunesh?
And I think, let's see, I'm trying to see, because a lot of my questions, as I said, have been answered. Let's see, where did I want to... Last two questions. Under 4.23, under severability, it says if a provision of this law or its application is found to be unconstitutional and void, the remaining provisions or applications of this law can be given effect without the invalid provision or application are valid. So I'm wondering why this sort of disclaimer is included in here. Are you concerned that there are parts of this that are either unconstitutional and therefore we would not be liable for that? I'm confused why you would have that in there.
Senator Duckworth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm going to defer to somebody if we have a technical expert that can handle that question.
Ms. Hoffer? Or Betsy?
Ms. Lewis.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Ms. Hoffer. Okay, one of you smart people, who wants it?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Lewis will take the question. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, Mr.
Ms.
Chair,
Lewis.
I need every phenomenal member of the team on this one.
I'm more like backup here. Mr. Chair and Senator Kunesh, the subdivision 10 that you read about severability, is there, in case the law is challenged, a court finds the A provision within it unconstitutional, that the other parts can proceed as they're enacted?
Ms. Lewis, I have a quick follow-up to that. I mean, that's not unusual for this language to be in certain legislative proposals. It's not in everyone, but it's not necessarily unusual. It's been in others that I've seen, correct?
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct. It's another legislation, but not every single piece of legislation.
Ms. Senator Kunesh?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've never seen that before, and so I'm wondering if, as you look at this bill or you're presenting this bill, if there are areas that are already questionable, perhaps they shouldn't be in there to begin with. But my last question is around the cost of this and the expectations from the commissioner. And I'm wondering if built into the fiscal note, there is this cost for creating the application, for monitoring the situation for the students, all of the work that goes into it. Is there is there funding for the commissioner specifically or the department specifically in order to create and maintain this program?
Mr. Chair, the short answer to that is yes, but we can get a longer explanation if we would like from our expert as well.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth.
Thank you.
Ms. Hoffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Kunesh, for the question. Yes, the fiscal note does provide an estimate of administrative and IT costs. So if you're looking for the actual number, it would be on page 10 on line 125. It shows that in fiscal year 2023, the cost would be $1.4 million. In fiscal year 2024, it would be $1.3 million. And in fiscal year 2025, it would be $1.2 million. And there's actually some assumptions in the fiscal note about what all those administrative dollars would cover. So you'll find those beginning on page 6. So there are IT costs there for a new online application system and to integrate MDE's IT systems in order to process the applications as well as process the payments to the districts that would then be transferred to the non-public schools. So the cost for that was $893,000 in fiscal year 2023. And then there were percentages in fiscal year 2024 and 25 for maintenance of $179,000 and $90,000. Below that are the administration costs. And so essentially that would be for 8 additional FTEs to implement and monitor and support the program. So it'd be for 2 education finance specialists to review, determine eligibility, and approve applications. For 2 education finance specialists for data analytics, modeling, and reporting, and to work with online and phone fraud investigations. 1 FTE for office and administrative support, 1 FTE program supervisor to oversee the program, and then 2 auditor principals to review and audit the program as necessary to prevent fraud.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I just wanted to add something while we're on the fiscal note, if that's okay. And thank goodness for the dream team here to back me up. A couple things to share regarding the fiscal note in general. It makes an assumption that, if you read the language in here, that school districts must approve these requests, which isn't necessarily the case. They don't necessarily have to, although there is an appeals process. And number 2, the adoption rate is somewhat debatable as to how many people would maybe take folks up on this program. But I would like to ask Ms. Hoffer if she'd be willing to help explain line 49 in the fiscal note, that category, if you could help us understand what that means or what that's saying too, please.
Ms. Hoffer?
On page 8.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Duckworth, for the question. Let me just get there.
Thank you.
Yes, so line 49 is the statewide average general education aid entitlement, which is multiplied by 50%. So this is the amount of the aid entitlement that school districts would retain for students who have left and enrolled in a non-public school under the scholarship program. So in fiscal year 2024, that's estimated at a $9.2 million entitlement. And for fiscal year 2025, it's a $12.1 million entitlement.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffer. I mean, it is unusual. It shows that it's a cost of, what, $9 million and then $12 million. But we're giving the schools, the districts, half the general ed revenue. So how is it a cost if we give them money? That is the bizarre part. Somebody in quantum math will come up with something, but I don't get that. We give them money. Usually if a child leaves a school, the whole $9,000 or $10,000 goes. If a child leaves a school right now, parents take them out, the child goes somewhere else, homeschool or wherever, they lose that $10,000, let's say. So that's $10,000 they don't get. We don't mark it as a cost. They just don't. The child brings, the dollars are attached to the child, and the costs are attached to that child. The child is in the school, there are costs to teach that child. The child leaves the school, there are no costs associated because the child isn't there. So the idea that we give back half the money in gen ed in perpetuity for that child who's not there, as long as they're not there, that we all have to admit is a bit of a gray area. But Senator Wieger, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Duckworth, does a private school have a right to refuse admission for a parent that with a child that has disability? Does the private school need to accept that child if a parent requests?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wieger, for a whole host of reasons, whether it be whether or not they can accept that student based on capacity, et cetera, the short answer to your question is no.
Okay.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Public schools do. And we have a fundamental difference, I believe, here in terms of the difference between the funding for public schools and whether there should be vouchers, whether money should be diverted from public schools. And that term, you might object with that, but that's the term not only used by, you know, the teachers, by many parents, but also by school boards now and administrators. And there was a letter today, March 14, I believe we have it. It wasn't posted or distributed, but I assume the committee received it. It's and I just want to highlight a few of the points because I strongly agree with those points. Overall, Senate File 3656 violates the spirit of public education. Cites four main reasons. Voucher programs for special ed students undermine a special education student's right to a free and appropriate education. In addition, it is not clear if the district would have to provide compensatory services if the student did not receive the required services and return to the district. Two, private schools can deny, as you noted, admittance arbitrarily and do not offer equal access to all students. Private schools close their doors to children for many reasons, including the level and severity of a student's special needs. Public schools can't. Those are my words, the last sentence. A family wishing to use a voucher for their child with a disability can still be turned away, while public schools accept all students. Third, private schools are not accountable to the public or state policymakers by statute. They operate with little oversight, few financial or academic reporting requirements, lower standards for teachers, and no accountability for poor results. An audit of the Arizona Education Savings Account Program showed lax financial oversight and a failure to flag accounts at high risk for fraud. And finally, voucher programs do not improve student achievement. Recent studies of Louisiana, Indiana, and Ohio voucher programs revealed that students who used vouchers perform worse academically than their peers. In addition, studies of voucher programs in Alabama, Milwaukee, Cleveland, and the District of Columbia found that students offered vouchers showed no improvement in reading or math over those not in the program. The group, they conclude, and I'll mention the group, the Association of Metro School Districts, the Minnesota School Boards Association, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, Schools for Equity in Education, Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals, Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association, the Rural Education Association, the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education, St. Paul Public Schools, and there's more other that also. And I could also produce one from the Minnesota Parent Teachers Association. They conclude, rather than diverting taxpayer dollars to non-public schools, state policymakers should focus their efforts and state resources on addressing the growing unfunded special ed cost, currently at $780 million. This is unfunded, referred to as the cross-subsidy, unfunded dollars that have to go from the general fund to special ed. That's not fair. It's not right for the 145,000 students in special ed right now. It's not fair for the teachers, the teacher that we heard from, and others. So, Mr. Chair, respectfully, I disagree. If we're going to vote on it, I request a roll call vote.
I'll go to Senator Duckworth. We're going to wrap up here in a couple minutes. We have one more bill to go. I'll go to Senator Duckworth, and before we do that, Ms. Monska, did you have a question or comment you wanted to share?
Yes, I do. You talked about public schools being accountable for kids, and a lot of the speakers talked about, well, they're not going to give students a free and appropriate education. Well, we are the parents. We know what's best for our kids. If the private schools aren't providing our kids with a good education, we'll move them because we will have choice. And the public schools are not doing a great job. Look at the reading and writing scores for kids of color in the public schools and in Minneapolis public schools. You guys want to say you're being held accountable? I see no accountability. The only accountability is for parents to be able to move their kids. And the last comment hurt me the most, the fact that you guys have to move money from the general ed population for our kids. All we hear about is how expensive our kids are in public school and what a burden they are, and I'm absolutely sick of it. We don't feel like our kids are wanted there. And if our kids are too expensive and too difficult and take money away from your high-achieving, great, normal kids, then let us go somewhere else.
Thank you, Ms. Monska. Senator Duckworth, you want to wrap up?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll do my best to follow that. And Senator Wieger, as always, I appreciate you making sure that the exhaustive list of everybody who opposes the bill is read into the record. But it's a fair point, and your points are well taken. And that's why we bring this bill forward. I'm not so naive as to think that we're going to solve this issue with one bill and that all the ideas are exactly right. And that's why I appreciate all the feedback from everybody. I also know all the organizations that you referenced care about kids at the end of the day. And they want to support parents and they want to support kids, whether it's in public school or whether it's our kids with special needs or you name it. And so this bill is an attempt to look at how do we strike a balance? How do we allow parents and our children with special needs different options and choices so they can be best served? And then also, if they choose to do that, how do we give our school districts some financial relief and help as well? Is it fully funding the cross subsidy? No, it's not. But is it a step, hopefully, in the right direction? Well, it could be. And I appreciate the conversation. Hope we continue to have it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Just a final comment. Again, we're looking for solutions and options. The options and solutions that have been available so far have been an abysmal failure. We're trying to support educators. We're trying to support teachers. We're trying to support parents. We're trying to find reform and solutions that work. What I hear constantly for the last several years and the time I've been here is the same thing. And in that time, it's gotten worse for our kids. As Ms. Monska pointed out, especially for the children of color. But yet we come back with the same old solutions and continue to attack new ideas and new solutions, innovations, whether it's this or like trying to accommodate the school districts with short calls, substitute teachers or innovation or anything else. It's always met with a big, fat no. Now, you listed off a lot of organizations there, Mr. Senator Wieger, but again, these are parents who bring this forward. We appreciate the organizations, we consult them frequently, and we appreciate input to drive to solutions. But in the end, I'm not here to support or represent a single lobbyist group. I'm here to support and represent parents in the district and the best possible options and outcomes for those parents. So thank you for the lobbyist groups, but I'm not here to represent them. They got a lot of money to pay people to represent their positions. The parents here today that have testified on screen, and there's thousands more out there, are looking for the best option for their children. And that's who I'm representing, and I'm sure that's who Senator Duckworth is representing. So we continue to hear the same stuff. We're trying to find options and solutions and speak some truths and stop the status quo. So with that, thank you for the indulgence. Senate file, what was it, 3656 to be laid over possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Thank you, testifiers. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
On to the next bill. Senator Duckworth, Senate file 3297.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair, and I do have an amendment I'd like to move.
Author's Amendment A1. Members, Author's Amendment A1. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. You got your amendment. Okay, Senator Duckworth, what do you have here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to speak to Senate File 3297. I'm going to read to you briefly what this bill seeks to do, and then we'll have some folks testify to it. Under this proposal, a legislative working group would be created, four members each from the House and Senate with equal representation by majority and minority caucuses, in order to specifically study tuition billing for special education and general education services provided to students with disabilities by schools outside of their district of residence. Minnesota Public School Choice Options allow students to open enroll in neighboring school districts and or to choose to enroll in charter schools. Under current law, the serving school is allowed to bill back the district where the student resides most of the special education costs associated with the student. This has led to some contention between public schools because the serving district gets to more or less determine the services it provides and the costs involved. These amounts often come as a surprise and a shock to the resident district. However, charter schools in particular, which are smaller and often serve higher proportions of IEP students, argue the current system is necessary because they have no other way to absorb special education expenses. The goal of the working group is to determine what statutory changes to special education billing are necessary to adequately and equitably fund school districts, cooperatives, and charter schools in meeting the needs of students with individualized education programs. The report would be due by the end of January, and the fiscal note projects that it would require about $25,000 to implement, Mr. Chair. And with that, I would like to invite our testifiers.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Is it Mr. Josh Downham? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you're with for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Josh Downham with the Minneapolis Public Schools. And I want to thank Senator Duckworth for authoring the bill. We're happy to have bipartisan support, House and Senate. So this is moving this issue in the right direction. And I also like to thank Eugene Piccolo with the Association of Minnesota Charter Schools, Martin Holden with the Legal Services Advocacy Project representing parents, and Valerie Dozlin with the intermediate schools who helped draft this bill. And in the interest of time, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to read all the acronyms that we've been just chatting about, but I'm testifying on behalf of all those education groups that Senator Leger.
Just say SLATE, okay? Just say SLATE.
The full SLATE, Mr. Chair. So, members, this really is a simple bill. But it's a simple bill that is tackling a very complex problem, and that problem is special education tuition billing. And as Senator Duckworth mentioned, when a student open enrolls or attends a charter school, the general education funding follows that student. And so the revenue follows the student to the serving district, but the unreimbursed portion of special education is billed back to the resident district. The resident school district does not determine the services or costs associated with those services. And they do not, like I said, receive the funding for the student, yet they pay the tuition bill. And those bills have been going up. I believe the last time Mr. Melcher was before the committee, before the pandemic, He mentioned that those tuition bills now exceed $220 million a year. I don't know where that is today, but would love to maybe talk to Ms. Yetter about that. So the intersection of our school choice laws, which allow, and our education finance laws, really are misaligned, because the folks determining service levels, costs, and who's actually paying for those services are not aligned. And as the state has added additional layers of school choice, whether that's open enrollment or charter schools, we really haven't addressed the fact that the district where the parent resides still must cover these those costs above what the state provides. And this, as Senator Duckworth mentioned, it's often pits parents against parents and schools against schools. I've had some very challenging conversations with parents who ask me why they should send their child to a Minneapolis public school when the special education charter school just down the road spends $11,000 a year just on their facilities costs to serve the special needs of that student. The state provides $1,300 in lease aid for those charter schools. The balance is billed back to the resident district, comes out of the general fund of those resident districts. So I want to be clear that we believe every child, whether they're served at a charter school or a public school, should have the needs in their IEP met. And I want to just encourage the members on this committee, both Republican and Democrat, to consider, if this bill passes, to consider joining the working group, because this really affects districts across the state and affects parents across the state, and really should not be a partisan issue. So, Mr. Chair, I do appreciate the opportunity to address the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Downham. And next is Mr. Matt Shaver. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you're with for the record. You may begin. Thank you.
All right. Chair Chamberlain, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver, and I'm the policy director for Ed Allies. And I'm here to testify in support of Senate File 3297 as amended. I want to thank Senator Duckworth for your leadership in putting this bill together. So for more than 60 years in Minnesota, it has been the responsibility of the home district to provide for the special education of students with disabilities, which includes funding, even if that student attends school in another district. In order to understand the purpose of this law, you have to look at special education in Minnesota before 1957. So Minnesota had allowed but not required special education courses going back to 1915, but 40 years later, special education was still only offered in 30 of 87 counties. So many children with disabilities either had no school to go to or were segregated and institutionalized and sent to learn far away from home because their resident districts did not have special education programming. By requiring every district to provide special education services or allowing a student to enroll somewhere else at the resident district's expense in 1957, nearly 20 years before the federal government passed IDEA, the Minnesota legislature guaranteed an education to all students near their home and turned children that society had traditionally discarded into students by saying to kids with the highest needs, you deserve an education no matter where you live and no matter your need. Since then, open enrollment, public charter schools, and cooperatives have created complex funding challenges for local education agencies. So Senator Duckworth's effort to untangle these challenges by looking at the entire billing reimbursement process and ecosystem by putting together a working group is the exact right path forward, because funding adequacy and equity is what every child, and especially children with disabilities, deserves. We want to see this working group be inclusive of all voices and perspectives, and in particular center kids with disabilities as well as parents and caregivers with disabilities as well. This will ensure that any decisions made by this working group will be in service of students. This cannot just be a dollars and cents conversation. Solving this challenge will not eliminate the special education cross subsidy on its own. Special education is expensive, and it's supposed to be. Students with disabilities are not a drain on budgets, they are an asset to our state. Finding a workable solution for all parties on this piece of the puzzle will make it possible for families to continue to find a learning environment that supports their child's needs no matter where they live or what their disability is. And that will uphold the spirit of Minnesota's laws established more than 60 years ago. Thank you again for your leadership, Senator Duckworth. Thank you to the committee for your time, and thank you all for your public service to our state.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. I just have a question, Senator Duckworth. Because this is dealing, the specific point of this was to deal with legislative changes. You have just House and Senate members. Was that for a particular reason and not include anybody from special ed or perhaps someone like Mr. Downham?
Mr. Chair, I sense that somebody's come up here to bail me out on that one, so I'm going to go ahead and let him chime in on that.
Mr. Downham.
Mr. Chair, that's actually a very good question. When we consider the option for a task force versus a working group, part of the reason why we went with a working group, well, it was twofold. Number one, by having legislators be the kind of the committee, as it were, they can solicit feedback from as many folks as possible. And specific in the legislation, it requires that the working group take feedback from parents with students who have special needs. That's written right into the language. But the other part is actually a real just basic one. Task forces are more expensive. They have to go through a number of committees. And trying to do this as cheaply as possible, and I know Representative Uakim, who is the author in the House, has said that the working group that they did on the titles, car title issue, she said they were able to go very deep as members on that working group, legislative working group, and were able to come to a bipartisan agreement. And I thought that was, in the spirit of bipartisanship, the better way to go.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Downham. Members, anything else? All right. Senator Duckworth, final comment?
No, Mr. Chair, just as the discussion on the previous bill kind of was indicative of this, and then the discussion here is this could be a very complex issue, so creating a group that can look at this and figure out ways in which we can maybe positively influence and impact it, I think, will be a very helpful measure, hence me bringing the bill forward, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Members, with that, Senate File 3297 be laid over as amended. Okay, we have no other business today. We will be meeting Wednesday, members. Few bills on the agenda. Thank you very much. We are adjourned.